arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and golden, protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium. There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium, boron, gadolinium, niobium, iridium, and strontium, and silicon, and silver, and samarium, and bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium. Isn't that interesting? I knew you would. I hope you're all taking notes, because there's going to be a short quiz next period. There's holmium and helium and hafnium and erbium and phosphorus and francium and fluorine and terbium and manganese and mercury, molybdenum and magnesium, dysprosium and scandium and cerium and cesium and lead, praseodymium and platinum, plutonium, palladium, promethium, potassium, polonium, tantalum, technetium, titanium, tellurium, and cadmium and calcium and chromium and curium. There's sulfur, californium, and fermium, berkelium, and also mendelevium, einsteinium, nobelium, and argon, kryptonium, radon, xenon, zinc, and rhodium, and chlorine, carbon, cobalt, copper, tungsten, tin, and sodium. These are the only ones of which the news has come to Harvard. And there may be many others, but they haven't been discovered.
It's part one.
For English Press 2.
Greetings, xenophiles. Turn the microphones on, it works better. On this day in 1839, Dmitry Mendeleev presented the first periodic table of elements to the Russian Chemical Society, which is a perfect excuse to play that song, The Elements Song, by Tom Lehrer. In 1899 today, Felix Hoffmann from the German company Bayer invented aspirin. Bit of a headache. On this day in 1945, George Nielsen patented the trampoline. Now, I bet you thought the trampoline was older than that, because I certainly did. Happy birthday to Pink Floyd's David Gilmour, who's 79 today, and we'll be hearing a bit more from him later. Elbow's Guy Garvey is 51, and happy 62nd birthday to Peter Rain. Right, that's the birthdays over. Our guest this week, originally from, well, we'll find out in a minute, somewhere in Scotland. There's a clue, and I guess the name is a fairly typical Scottish name, Douglas McKenzie. We got here, I don't know, a full half hour before I did, because he didn't have to go through the traffic that was on Dacia. Now, so I'm going to start the usual four chapters of the story, the first question, the hardest question of the night, Douglas McKenzie, who do you think you are?
Well, I really don't know, which is why it's interesting to come on the programme, because I present fairly regularly news and current affairs, and I'm with a couple of hours' research, I feel I'm perfectly capable to talk to my guests. With this, I've been reading my notes all afternoon, trying to decide who I am.
Trying to figure out who you are, and you should know that kind of off by heart by now, right?
Well, I've been with me long enough, but still.
But yeah, okay, so here's what we're going to do. We'll get through the story in the usual chapters. And we start with the first one. Bye-bye, Irina. She's leaving. Bye-bye. And it's a...
Expat Life.
They're all back.
Tell me about your childhood.
That's from a Thomas Dolby record, you know. tell me about your childhood.
Oh, my childhood. I was born just outside Aberdeen in northeast Scotland. Stayed there for a total of 10 days, just long enough to be born.
So you remember much about it then?
Oh, yeah. So it's a major part of my autobiography. my father was in the Air Force, so he was allowed to stay. He'd been posted, but he'd been allowed to stay there long enough for me to be born in Scotland. And then off we went to... he was posted to Germany, but we lived most of the time in Holland because it was cheaper. And after various postings, came back to Yorkshire when he was at RAF Patrington. And he retired from the Air Force, came back to Scotland when I was seven, to central Scotland, to Perthshire. Mm-hmm. And I was something of an oddball returning there. I was... a seven-year-old Scot who spoke with a Yorkshire accent and occasionally turned up at school in lederhosen.
Oh, wow, lederhosen. You got pictures? At least I want to see.
I tried to burn most of them. I think it was my mother's approach you know, following Johnny Cash and A Boy Named Sue. You know, if you can go to school in Scotland in lederhosen, life will not scar you.
Good point. Makes a lot of sense. Were you the only one? Were you part of a brood of children?
No, I was the only child.
Oh, so you didn't have to fight for attention then. You got it all anyway, whether you wanted it or not.
Well, I don't know. You know, my parents, semi-retired, ran a shop and post office, so I spent an awful lot of time on my own, which
right.
was fine.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been happy with that.
Okay. When you said living in Holland and your father was posted in Germany, but Holland, because it's cheaper, interesting, and didn't realise they did that, so he commuted to the army.
Yes, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Wow. Were you, like, on a base, or were you just living, you know, as civilians? Was it anyhow, did you feel the difference? I mean, you were obviously a small child, but did you sense that this is different?
Obviously, it just felt natural to me. No, it wasn't on the base. We never lived on a base. Later in Yorkshire, I had friends who were on the base, and that seemed strange to me, this kind of weird boarding school. But no, we lived with a Dutch family who rented a cottage to us, and they were farmers, market gardeners, and helped out pulling asparagus and things. Well, as much as you can as a 3-year-old.
Mm-hmm. and you went back to Scotland age, what, 7, to start?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Pretty much starting school, or...
Oh, no,
my
no,
year
no.
Three,
no. I'd been marched off to a school aged 4 in Yorkshire.
Ah, in Yorkshire, yes, correct, in Yorkshire. So, did you enjoy that?
School?
Yeah.
No.
Not at all.
never. I mean, I was good at school, although when I started in primary school in Scotland, because I'd come from the English system, it was different. I'm not going to say one is better than the other, but I was way ahead in language and way behind in arithmetic and maths.
Right.
And my very traditional Scottish primary school teacher decided the best way to teach me mathematics was to smack me around the head every day.
And make you count how many times.
Yeah, that's it.
That's what we did.
So, yeah, after that, I mean, I stayed in the state school system, and then I got a place at an assisted place at a private school where I did my later qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was good at it, but I can't say they were the best days of my life. I mean, the school features quite heavily in Lady Scott's report on child abuse in Scottish schools.
Oh, okay.
I mean, not for me. I wasn't a boarder. I was a day boy. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, still, I can't say I was thrilled by the place.
Right. Interesting. And as you got towards, you know, the later school years when you start to specialise and you start thinking, well, I'm either good at sciences or languages or arts or what? I'm guessing it wasn't the maths then. It wasn't the sciences and the mathematics. You were more of a humanistic kind of...
No, not necessarily. I mean, I did physics as far as I could, but it was all these pressures of choices, a very bad thing for school children. So, for example, I had to choose between German and chemistry, and I did German because I was lazy because I spoke German, so it was pretty easy thing to do.
Right.
Then choosing between Latin and biology, and the head teacher of the school was desperate to preserve the Latin department, the classics department, so he forced me into doing Latin
for
5 years of secondary school.
And you didn't say to him, look, Latin is a dead tongue, as dead can be, and first it killed the Romans and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he sold me this, not the sciences. I did eventually want to do medicine, and he sold me this now very unconvincing story that you need Latin for medicine to understand anatomy. And, well, you know, when you're 14, you believe these things.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, and so at this point, I guess this leads nicely onto the next question, which would be, what were you dreaming to be? Were you thinking, when I grow up, I will be a doctor, lawyer, astronaut, crane driver?
Well, the doctor was part of it, probably too late.
Why?
After I'd made...
Why were you thinking to be a doctor?
The white coat.
Oh, the white coat.
Pulling the girls.
The uniform.
I mean, this was after I'd realised that I probably was not going to be a rock star. So a doctor was the next best thing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, rock star, doctor. Rock stars need doctors, usually.
Usually, yes.
After a while, yeah. Your rock star dreams, were you doing anything to try and, you know, get to what? I mean, were you playing an instrument?
I played several instruments.
All at the same time?
Well, as a one-man band, I might have done better. But yeah, I played cornet and trumpet and piano and guitar, but none of them outstandingly.
But okay, so cornet and trumpet would have been an unusual thing in a rock band.
Yep.
Although you could have put John Dexy's Midnight Runners maybe or something like that. Would have been all right.
We did experiment, but everyone told me to shut up. I was too loud on the trumpet.
Okay. Yeah, that's not volume control, is it? No, that's a problem. Okay. So when you were not at school, I mean, when you were, you know, weekends and holidays and evenings and stuff, what were your passions? What kept you busy?
Well, there was sport, and certainly when I went to a new school, I felt, because I was paid for by the state to go there, I had to involve myself in all school activities. So I played rugby, I played cricket, I was in the debating society. As I got through school a bit further, I realised that it didn't really count for anything. So I did my own thing in the evenings. And then, of course, I mean, eventually at some point in your school career, girls come along and that becomes a lot more interesting.
And then the school career kind of takes a dive, doesn't it? Girls and alcohol. Yeah, it's been the ruin of many a good boy. There's a song about that, isn't there?
Yes, indeed there is.
More than one.
Lord knows I am one. Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah, so so eventually you went on study something. I mean, after school, you got your O levels. You went for A levels in university.
Well, higher, as we do in Scotland, which
sounds much nicer.
Well, it's different. It's specialised, but it's five subjects rather than the two or three you do at A level. Mm-hmm. But still quite restrictive. And yeah, I went to St Andrews University, hoping that I could get into medicine there, switching from science courses.
Right.
They said no, it wasn't possible. So I left. I went to London to work for a year. And eventually I went back to Aberdeen University to do chemistry, which I'd never done at school.
Right.
And that was the challenge. And I wasn't particularly interested in chemistry.
But it leads to biology, which helps with medicine.
Yeah. And I don't know. I got through my degree. Realised I didn't really want to wash test tubes for the rest of my days. So.
Oh, it's a glamorous job of a doctor. So, yeah, and then we'll move the story on. But after time already, can you believe it, to play some music. And you chose a classic Scottish act. Sensational Alex Harvey Band. Underrated, largely unknown, unfortunately. Especially in Scotland, weirdly enough. Tell me, what and why?
Well, I've always admired Alex Harvey. He's, the word iconic is vastly overused, but he was very much that in Scottish rock. It was the second big rock concert I went to. First was Hawkwind.
Oh, wow. Yes, starters, you mean to go on.
Yeah, and then Alex Harvey. And it's interesting. He played in Perth, a fairly small town in Scotland. And I was there 2 weeks ago with taking my daughter-in-law's mother, Hungarian, round. And what was Perth Concert Hall has now been revamped into the museum, which holds the Stone of Destiny, the lump of rock that you lot stole from us those years ago. and I was thinking, well, that's a part of Scottish history and it's important, but so is Alex Harvey. And, you know, in any other country, there would be statues to Alex Harvey. And we don't do it in Scotland. You think of Ireland, you know, there's Phil Lynott has got a statue in Dublin.
Even Phil Lynott.
Rory Gallagher in Cork. And all we've got in Scotland is a crowd-funded one of on Scott in Kirriemuir.
Right.
So I think Alex Harvey is part of Scottish history who should be recognised.
That's it. Let's get a crowdfund thing going. Let's get a GoFundMe thing about statue for Alex Harvey.
N-E-X-T.
But why this particular track?
Jack Brel.
Okay.
And his interpretation of it. I think it's just brilliant what he's done with it.
Let's hear it.
Naked, a sin, an army towel covering my belly. Some of us weep, some of us howl, knees turn to jelly. But next, I was just a child, 100 like me. I followed a naked body, a naked body followed me. Next, next. I was just a child when my innocence was lost in a mobile army hood house, a gift of the army, free of cost. Me, I really would have liked a little bit of tenderness. Maybe a word, maybe a smile, maybe some happiness, but next. Oh, it was not so tragic and heaven did not fall. But how much at the time I hated being there at all. Next. Trucks, the flying flags, the queer lieutenant slapped our asses thinking we were fags. Next! 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 I swear on the wet head of my first kiss of gonorrhea, it is his ugly voice that I forever fear. Next! A voice that stinks of whiskey, corpses and of mud. The voice of nations, the thick voice of blood. Next, next. Since then each woman I have taken into bed, they seem to lie in my arms and they whisper in my head. Next, next.
And of course listeners to the podcast version get to hear the whole song.
Good people gather around Radio Gorilla.
Expat Life.
Money, money, money.
And we're back, Expat Life, with Douglas McKenzie. Now, the story moves on. What were you doing at IBM in Peterlee? Close to my old stomping ground.
Yes, indeed. That was pre-university employment. I'm sure the two of us could do a... an IT version of the of the Three Yorkshiremen.
Oh, yes.
I used to dream of punch cards. We had to buy holes in paper tape. So,
brilliant. Let's do it.
So that was my first experience of computing, and it was put to the side. And then after my chemistry degree, couldn't find a job. I did have a place at Yale to do philosophy of science, which I hadn't realized was such an honor. And it was not down to my brilliance, but to the brilliance of my professor who wrote my recommendation. But it required $50,000 to go.
Ooh, okay. But I mean, just to name the philosophy of science, it sounds pretty impressive.
Well, I managed to raise £10 from a local charity, which was their old thing that they used to give a bag of raisins for the raisin term at St. Andrews. Yeah. So they thought the modern equivalent of that would be a tenner. So I was 49,990 short.
So you managed to do that course for about 4.5 seconds.
Yeah, so in the, I went fell into the sink estate of IT and did a master's in computing.
I mean, what was the trigger for that? Was it just, this seems like the upcoming thing, I'll do it? Or were you genuinely interested? Or was it just pragmatic?
Neither of those. No, if I'm honest, I was staying at Aberdeen University in a fantastic house. It was the family home of Crombie, the mill owners, who used to make the military coats.
Yes,
and it was falling apart. And the university said, we want people to stay there. We can't charge you any money for it because we can't insure you. So I had this free for a year.
Ooh.
I'd also fallen in love with the girl next door. So I thought, oh, just find something in Aberdeen, computing, that'll do.
Yeah.
So.
What are those instant... Yep. Like that? No.
Well, possibly.
Fair enough. That's the first time I've ever heard anybody say I got a job in computing and won the girl.
Well, it was before.
So this was... I didn't even know there was an IBM in Peterlee. I live just around the corner.
It was their UK Scientific Centre. Mm-hmm. So it was lots of boffins from Oxford and Cambridge,
right,
studying obscure things. They were doing a model of the Scottish economy. Somebody was modelling the bones of the inner ear.
What were you doing?
I was working on computer-aided instruction programs for schools, teaching about the oil industry, teaching about nutrition. And we had the latest and greatest computers, which had three colours of text on them.
Three whole colours. Yeah. No graphics yet, just text.
Well, you could do dots if you had a day to spare to do a graphic.
Yes, on the graph paper first, and then punch in the hexadecimal. Yeah. Oh, dear Lord. Yeah, and what did that lead on to?
After I did my master's in computing, I taught for a while computing studies in East Kilbride, and then I got the chance to carry on with what I'd done before with the computer-aided instruction. And I went to the States to work for AT&T, who were in the middle of a breakup.
Okay.
So they had lots of training to do.
This was when Big Bell became Baby Bells,
That's right. Yeah. Exactly that, yeah. And a few years doing that. And then, as you know, one of the few benefits of computing is that you can do it anywhere.
True.
So, I moved around.
Wasn't always the case, though, right? I mean, nowadays, you can actually work from anywhere now.
Well, there's that, so then I went to Germany to work for a machine translation company, and then back to England for a while, Scotland, Ireland, Netherlands.
And just taking the jobs as they appeared. Was this a deliberate sort of career, climb, or were you just, I'll do that now, and then I'll do that, and then I'll do that?
It was pretty much that, and linked with personal things that, I fancy Ireland. I've always wanted to live in Ireland.
Yeah.
And
so do I. I've spent like 24 hours there in my life. it was the day before I came here.
Right.
I'll tell you the story off air. Regular listeners know that story already. Don't bore them. So at which point, you mentioned in your notes here, at a point you started, were e-commerce. Was this you sort of hopping around doing teaching and doing research, I guess, not only just teaching, right? All these skipping around the different countries.
There was some research involved in it, but most of it was mainline computing. If you call machine translation mainline, but I was working more and more in digital media, multimedia, as it was called in those days, kiosk displays and the like. So I got involved in e-commerce very, very early, about 1995, with my own company. And
what's your favourite language? Computing language.
One that someone else is writing for me.
Yes. Okay.
But, it goes all the way back for me with to Fortran.
Because you're the one who mentioned punch cards and biting paper tape, so I'm thinking, COBOL must be under your belt at least.
Oh, I had to teach COBOL, it was horrible. I remember saying then to the Scottish Education Department, this is dead, why are we teaching it? And they said, the education, it's like an oil tanker, it takes a long time to turn around. And I met somebody last year who was teaching in FE in Scotland, yes, still teaching COBOL.
Banks, basically. Yeah. Banks and councils and airlines who don't want to touch it. They don't know how it works. It ain't broke. They don't want to fix it, but they need someone who knows about it just in case. Yeah, we could have made, I don't know about you, but we should have made a bloody fortune during the millennium with all the Y2K bug stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. I ended up just paying other people to do it for me. What an idiot. So at a point, you led to this. It says here, now a double life, yeah? Because now you started taking other interests, and we'll probably talk about those after the next piece of music. At which point did you start? Did you always have a fascination with photography?
Yeah, pretty much. I always had from about the age of 10, I had a camera in my hands. But most of the time it was just for fun. It was only later that, you can't make a living. Well, yeah, you can make a living out of it, but I can't make a living out of it.
David Bailey made him.
Exactly. That's exactly the name that popped into my head.
Now we're showing our age. If we think of a contemporary photographer, David Bailey. Yeah. Oh, God. Let's play some Rolling Stones, why don't we? Why did you pick? I mean, apart from the fact that you say it's just the greatest guitar riff in the history of guitar riffs, right? But
Why?
Well, it reminds me of my time in Aberdeen. They played a surprise concert there in 1982 and people queued for hours to get tickets. I didn't. My flatmate got a ticket for me and said, do you want to go? And I went, Stones? Well, I really like the Stones, but they're kind of past it, aren't they? 40 years ago.
Yeah, still, their last album was one of the best ever.
Yeah, and this was a brilliant concert. They didn't play Gimme Shelter, but, you know, it's the first song I think about. Mm-hmm. I think of the Stones.
Well, let's hear it then.
Este divers, este foarte bun, este curajos, este tânăr și poate sta pe orice masă din lume. Este noul val din vinul românesc de la Carrefour. Deschide un vin românesc oriunde te-ai afla. Carrefour. Deschidem vinul românesc pe muzică românească.
Lately, I find myself lost around a ghostly center. It's tempting to blame, tempting to blame, and lose your temper in this plain and dull room of mine. I keep hoping that the dust I planted last week will soon into a cherry tree and cover me while I dream of you.
Taste, taste of your love.
I wanna feel the taste. Taste of your love.
Taste of your
love. I wanna feel the taste of your love.
Thank you.
been touching any corners lately. I find myself lost around the ghostly centers, tempting to blame and lose your temper and explain and all room of mine. I keep hoping that the dust I planted last week will soon bloom into a cherry tree and cover me while I think of you. I wanna feel the taste of your love. I wanna feel the taste of your love. I wanna feel the taste of your love. I wanna feel the taste of your love.
Expat Life, powered by those beautiful people at Radio Gorilla.
Expat Life.
Chaotic. Quixotic. Exotic.
And we are back with Douglas McKenzie. Chaotic, quixotic, exotic. It's supposed to describe this place. Sometimes describes the guest. at some point, your story brings you here. How, what, why?
Well, I was working in London for Visa, and part of the development team, or the good part of the development team there, was Romanian. Mm-hmm. In fact, they were Moldovan, but they'd been shipped down to Bucharest, mm-hmm. and then over to us. I'd done that as an interim. The girl I mentioned earlier, we'd been separated for many years, then we caught up again, had a few years together, then sadly she died of cancer.
Oh, that's a shame, sorry.
And so I just wanted to do something different. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to be based in Aberdeen. I'd been to Bucharest a few times to visit an old school friend who was working here, liked it, and then a possibility came up for a project for logistics, which was between Ukraine and Dubai. And I thought, well, what a good idea. I'll base myself in the middle.
Hang on, it's not though. Ukraine, Dubai.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Well, they were shipping to steel mills in Dubai from Ukraine, right, via China. And I thought, well, okay, okay, best place to be is in the middle in Romania.
Right.
Which shows how much I know about logistics. Because I got here and found there were no direct flights to Kyiv.
Right.
And I had to go either via Istanbul or the cheapest way was via London.
Oh.
And I thought, well, it doesn't matter, I'll take the train. And the train was about the same speed as a lame horse, so that didn't happen. But the project went on, and after 6 months, the project ended, and I thought, yeah, this is a nice place. Mm-hmm. I could quite happily live here, and so I have.
Right. So you ended up that project ended, and you found yourself going, I'll just stick around. Yeah. But then, did you have to find something to do?
I was living in Romania and only here at the weekends because I was traveling. I was working in London. I was working in Berlin. I was working in Rome. So lots of traveling.
How many air miles did you got?
A lot of time in lounges. And then, great. I finally found a job in Romania with a US company, mm-hmm. and I actually went on a holiday to celebrate it, and I came back and the pandemic hit, and the project was cancelled.
Ah,
mm-hmm. So I was left here without work. I had some income from a business I have in Scotland.
Was this the antique golf business?
It is. Yeah.
Tell me more about antique golf. It feels like there's a word missing.
antique golf clubs are the golf clubs which were made prior to 1929, when they became steel shafted. Before that, they were hickory shafted.
All right.
And all wood. So this was something I fell into from an e-commerce project where I was selling them for somebody else.
Right.
He left me absolutely stranded, and I had put so much into the software side of it that I learned how to do the restoration myself.
Okay.
And buying of the clubs. And, you know, that still continues as an e-commerce business.
So we're picking up old clubs and restoring them, refurbishing them, and then selling them on,
yeah.
And, wow. Okay. That's a cool bit. And you can do that from here? Or do you have to trip back and forth a lot?
I have to... Hey, if there's somebody listening who's involved in courier services to the US, you know, get in touch, because, you know, I found the cost from Romania was prohibitive, so I have to go back to Scotland to ship clubs,
right.
Which is not terribly convenient, as you can imagine.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah, I can imagine, yeah. So then I see also, I am just pushing the story on a bit because I'm looking at the clock, photography. We mentioned the photography earlier, but here you're focusing on taking pictures of what exactly?
Well, there was a whole variety. I took lots of stock photographs, you know, of everything mm-hmm. Bucharest, everything Romania, and then I took a lot of pictures at gigs, because I found that was very easy to do in Bucharest. Mm-hmm. And then during the pandemic, to pretend to myself I was working, I walked the streets taking photographs of Art Deco buildings.
To yourself you were working.
Yeah, it was sort of my conscience.
Did you fool yourself?
Oh, yeah, I very easily fooled. And out of that came a book, which was published last year.
Right. Yeah, so what's the book called? Where do we find it?
It's called Inaintisa Se Prabușesca, Art Deco și Modernismul in Bucharest. It's published by Humanitas.
So you can find it in all the big bookshops?
Everywhere, yeah. I'm amazed.
you're amazed? I'm going to hunt that one down, because it looks like a very fascinating thing. You mentioned about photographing gigs. You had a lucky escape, didn't you?
Yeah, it was very sad. One of the first people I met here, I was photographing a gig in the park, and she was a very keen and able photographer. And she gave me lots of tips of where to go and how to get into places and so on. And she did other photography as well. So in October 2015, I was looking very much forward to going to see an exhibition she had at the start of November of pictures of London that she'd taken. Before that, she liked Goodbye to Gravity. Uh-huh. I didn't. So she was in Collective on the night of the fire, and mm-hmm. I was not. She died the week after.
Yes. I know who you're talking about. I bought some of those photographs of London. Yeah, that was a hell of a story, and we're still sad and angry about it. Oh, but anyway, moving on. History and photography. So your book is about basically history of architecture, kind of.
Well, no, it's just about the Art Deco period and modernism from 1920 to the late 1940s in Bucharest, and really the state of the buildings. I'm a photographer in it. I'm showing people what's there. I'm not lecturing Romanians mm-hmm. of, hey, you're abandoning your heritage, you should be doing this. That's for people here to decide what they do.
Right.
But I just see so much potential. You know, I live in the old Jewish quarter, where almost every second building is an Art Deco classic.
Oh, right, yes.
falling down mm-hmm. in a terrible state.
Yeah.
But with the right money, with the right support, that would be a World Heritage Site supported by UNESCO.
Good point. Listen up, people. We've got to do something about this. We really have, because it's one of the weird things about Bucharest. It's got some of the most beautiful things right next door to some of... It just needs a bit of TLC, you know? And you're working on another book?
Yes. One of the artists featured in that book is Jean Monda, who, interestingly, published a book of all he'd done up to 1940 with mm-hmm. great pictures. So it's very nice to go back and take pictures of those buildings now and what they look like. But also, this is something, you know, if somebody out there knew Jean Monda, I mean, he died late 80s, so there will be people around who know him or lived in one of his buildings. I'd be really interesting to find out, because he stopped designing in the 40s when mm-hmm. the communists came to power, and I guess it was because, you know, the communists had confiscated his building and also he didn't want to work in a collective, but I don't know. So I'm sure there are people out there mm-hmm. who can tell me and fill in the human parts of the book rather than the uh-huh. architectural ones.
Okay, okay. Here's a question. So how do these people find you? If anyone's interested and has something for you, how do we find you?
Okay, I'm on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I am surprisingly the only Douglas McKenzie in Bucharest.
Right, but you're not the only Douglas McKenzie on Facebook because there are bloody millions
of you. Yes, you have to search for Bucharest. At my photo website is douglasmack.photo. Douglas Mack with a K.
Douglas Mack Kappa.
If I don't know what you do after the show, I'm quite mm-hmm. happy to put my email address out there.
All right, I'll stick them on when we post the things online. We'll put the contact details on. Cool. Interesting. You know what? It's time already to play. You're going to play B.U.G. Mafia.
Yep.
Tell me, Hotellery, why this one?
Well, I hope I understand the song. I mean, Teo, who died at Collective, told me about, you know, the rap music and hip-hop and got me listening to Bush Mafia and Parasiti. Mm-hmm. This one, I say, I hope it's ironic or it's not just totally misogynistic and people are going to curse me for it. But it's clever because of the musicality of it. You know, it's adding melody to rap and hip hop and the quality of that, I think, is excellent.
Yeah. I hope it's ironic too. I think it is, actually. And if the management are listening, this is the cleaned up radio edit.
Oh, I see.
Hai la mine, un pupic pe obraz, apoi lasă-te pe mine. Nu te mai ascunde, știu că-ți place. Lasă-l pe tata ei să-ți explice cum se face înainte și înapoi, cum ți-am spus o altă dată. Da, fata mea, hai să o facem late. Șampania curge, hai, dansează. Pune mâinile pe tine, trebuie să fiu pe față. Un autograf? Mai târziu. Acum vreau să-ți arăt ce băiară pot să fiu. Stau pregătit, ieși la lumină. Am chef de nebunit, n-are rost să fii timid. Dacă ești cu un mafiot, mi-este jur, sunt din Pantelimon. Nu mai e nimic de spus. Șampania curge, femeile dansează. Mafie și șmenarii în hotelul se distrez. Șampania curge, femeile dansează. Mafia și șmenarii în hotelul se distrează. Cameră de hotel, o femeie și un bolfaș. Asta este viața mea, femei, bani și hash. Fata mișcă bine, face striptease pentru mine. Îmi place tare, ea place și lui Dumnezeu. Fața jos, fundul sus, ha-ha. Ar fi bine să-l chemăm și pe prietena ta. E ca și făcut, deja e în dormitor. Fetele și eu, fetele din Pantelimon. Una e la parat, zic că nu mai este mult. Șampania curge și încă nu se dur. Fața jos, fundul sus, după cum ați învățat. Așa, prințesa, n-am nimic de reproșat. Dau la fetușor, una după alta. Se vede după fața lor că le place asta. Sunt un băiat de cartier, ce știe ce înseamnă viață. Așa că vă spun băieți, faceți bani și petreci. Șampania curge, femeile dansează. Mafie și șmenarii în hotelul se distrez. Șampania curge, femeile dansează. Mafie și șmenarii în hotelul se distrez. Nimeni nu pot să mă schimbe, și am să fiu mereu unde vedem. Numai femei în capul meu, pentru că ei iubesc băutura și bairam. Ridicați mâinile în sus, ce iubesc femei și bani. Nu pot să mă abuz, pentru că așa sunt eu. Hai,
so, on the podcast version, I'll play this song right at the end. I might even play the not radio version. Different rules. But you know what happens next?
Expat Life. Xenophiles, welcome.
Expat Life.
Next chapter.
Welcome back. Last chapter of the show. We've got about 2 minutes. But before we go any further, I want you to tell me a bit about... Does this remind you of anything? What is it?
Indeed it does.
What's it got to do with you?
That's the intro to one of the programmes on Broadcasting Scotland, where I work during the week, occasionally presenting evening news, and that's our programme for Sundays. So people with an interest in Scotland and Scotland's perspective on the world, you know, it's streamed live and it's on YouTube.
With video.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say.
And well, that's you.
That sounds familiar, yeah.
There's the thing. So basically, in the remaining minute and a half, what happens next? Do you have good plans for the future? Or are you the sort of person who doesn't make plans?
Trying to make plans. Mm-hmm. My intention was to stay in Romania. I was looking to buy an apartment here to stay permanently. We'll see what the presidential elections bring and that the country doesn't descend into lunacy.
Okay. It's always a risk.
I would like to do some e-commerce in Romania because it just does my head in the way e-commerce is done here in many organisations. And I want to keep writing and taking photographs.
Simple as that.
Yep.
Okay, very good. Yeah, and when's your next book? Have you got a release date for it?
Oh, God, I haven't written it yet.
Yeah, do you have at least a plan?
I have a plan, mm-hmm. Yeah. Because this is the anniversary, the 100th anniversary of Art Deco this year, so it would be nice to do it before the end of the year.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you very much. We're out of time. Nice story, nicely told. Clearly, you're comfortable with a microphone in front of your face. That's evident. Which is good. And we're going out with some Pink Floyd. I told you we'd refer back to David Gilmour, who's 79 today. You picked a particular Pink Floyd track, and why this one? I think I can guess, but, you know, tell the listeners.
Well, of course, Ukraine is the most important thing happening in the world today, and this makes with Andrei Klivenyuk's of Boomboxes singing Shervona Kalina just makes the hair stand up.
Doesn't it just? I mean, this... I was one of the first people to play this one here. Because it just happened that I was on the other day that first invasion started. And so thank you very much, Douglas McKenzie. Let's go and talk about some other things now.
Ideas.
listen again to this and previous shows, find us at expatlife.ro.
Expat Life.
New mobs, please!
Good night, everybody!
Pentru limba română, apasă 1.